Welcome back to the Lion Podcast. My name is Aaron Alexander. This is a place that we bring together the world's leading experts in all things health and wellness to help you optimize your mind, body, and movement. Today's conversation is with a new friend called Mike Posner. Mike is a pretty fascinating human being. He's climbed Mount Everest. He's walked across the United States of America. He's a Grammy-nominated artist, musician. He's tremendous. He's really like a beautiful soul, a very wise, sweet, kind human with just an immense amount of knowledge to share. And that is exactly what we do in this conversation. I think you guys are going to really love it. It was a really humble conversation. It was a really fun conversation. We started off doing some breath work. Both of us, I think, went pretty deep with the old breath work. And so that got weird in a good way. Things started off pretty silly, pretty fun. I think you guys are going to really get a ton out of this conversation. Thank you for subscribing so you get each week's episodes. Thank you for joining you. Thanks for leaving reviews. Let's get to it with my guy, Mike Posner.
I appreciate the session that you provided for my girlfriend and I last night.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I mean, you're welcome. My bad.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So when you started that sentence, I thought you were going to say, thanks for being a guest on my podcast. But then it went, so I had like a thank you for having me ready to go. And then it went a different way. And I said, thank you. Cause I was ready to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you, Mike Posner, tap into creativity? How do you get out of the way of yourself enough to allow yourself? I've heard you know, and other artists and such use language like channeling. The music moves through me. It's not me. You can't thank me. I'm just a vessel. Mm-hmm. Like, what is that experience?
Well, all of it's true. All of it sounds a little pretentious, but all those things are true. And I think the creativity and inspiration is always there. You know, it's just a matter of being open to it. And I guess widening the aperture of one's consciousness or awareness to hear the inspiration. So I'm blessed with a gift for sure that I think came with my being. My mom tells me stories from before I can remember of me being in the backyard and the birds are chirping and I'm trying to like sing the melodies back. So I think that was a gift that just came with my software, you know, that I was given, or hardware rather. And so, but it's something I've developed clearly. Yeah. Clearly yeah. I've developed it.
Yeah.
Over my lifetime. That's what you should do with a gift. You should take care of it and you should make the most of it and you should share it. But your question was about creativity. Yeah, man, I found some hacks for me that make me more open more of the time, you know. And this, a lot of the stuff you already do. We just did a breathwork session. You know, that definitely, I had an idea for a song.
Yeah, well, it came now. Up. You started, you pulled your recorder or cell phone or whatever.
Yeah, just had a little idea, a little lyric, a little melody, and maybe that will expand into a song. Maybe it won't. Maybe it'll expand into a song I don't use, and then there's another lyric I write in that song that I use in another. You never know what stuff can turn into. But the things that help me be more open are exercise, meditation, all stuff that happens to also just be good for a human being, breath work. And also just listening. Sometimes it comes when you're not expecting it, and inspiration can't be counted upon because it comes when it wants to. Sometimes you got to be a professional and just kind of like go to work even when inspiration isn't there. But when inspiration does come, I think it's really important to ride that wave until it crashes.
What gets in the way of inspiration for you, and how do you alchemize those things that may get in the way into something that feels beautiful or feels like art or feels like expression?
Yeah, what gets in the way is thinking about what anyone other than me thinks about a piece. If I'm writing a song or I'm writing a prose or creating anything, if I start to think about what Aaron thinks this is cool, will my audience think this is cool, will my manager think this is cool, it's done. That's like poison to creativity, because I believe an artist's job is to create the art that they want to exist in the world, period. And that's a really cool job. And it's cool because there's no second sentence, there's no asterisk to that, there's no caveat. Your job is to create what you think is beautiful, and no one else can do that but you.
Yeah.
Right? I can't write the songs that someone else could write. No one else could write the songs I can write. Oh, yeah. It's up to me.
Yeah.
And so that's a very beautiful way to make a living. And I'm grateful for it, for sure.
I was listening to a podcast with Rick Rubin, and he was talking about art being kind of like a diary entry, like a journal entry.
Yeah.
And how honest you are in your diary. Like, it'd be very weird if you were like lying to yourself in your private diary.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
It would.
But then so much of our lives is kind of like, oh, like, don't look at my diary. Like, I don't want someone to see this part of myself. But then it seems like that's kind of like the gift and like the value of the artist in culture is kind of leading with expressing that, like, the bleeding edge of themselves.
Yeah.
And putting it out into the world, which is what we all actually desire.
Yes.
It's just we're afraid to do it.
The artist plays a non-trivial role in society, you know, because often artists, myself included, become artists because we struggle to connect in normal ways.
Yeah.
Like in dialogue, in expression, we often feel like, oh, I don't really feel like connected to anyone through talking. That's how I used to feel. But in the music, I could really connect.
Right.
And what you find is you're essentially like sending out a like Morse code into the ether,
right,
and saying, this is what it's fucking like for me to be me.
Yeah.
And no one gets it. And what happens is the more honestly you send that code, the more the honest that coding is, people go, they hear it and they go, fuck, thank you.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it's like to be me. I didn't even know how to say it. I'm not the only one. Mm. I'm not alone. Mm. It's a connection of human to human, and it can save lives. Mm. It's a non-trivial role. And the trippy, also like extra beautiful part about it is, in my case, music, and I guess all mediums of art, transcends time and space. Meaning, I can record a song, and I'm recording it at my house into my microphone, and the person is going to receive it in another place. And I'm recording it in the present moment, in my right now. It's received by the listener in a different right now. So it goes from now to now. So it transcends time in a very weird way, and transcends space in a very weird way. Hmm. And I often think about the person that may connect with a piece I'm working on isn't even born yet. Like, how beautiful is that? Because that's been my experience with other people's art.
Well,
when I go look at a Van Gogh, I'm not trying to compare myself to Van Gogh, but I go look at a Van Gogh, if does something to me. I've been brought to tears by a Van Gogh. He's long gone, you know? He didn't know about a cell phone. He didn't know about Nas. He didn't know about the hip-hop I listened to growing up. He didn't know about a podcast. But he was so honest in his expression of what it was like for him to be human, that it connected with something in me and what it's like for me to be human. And that's just, it's very, it's beautiful.
Mm. That's beautiful. That's something, there was something else I was excited about asking, and then you said that, and it kind of brought this new perspective on.
Yeah, like that old thing I was going to ask you was lame.
That was lame. That was whack shit. as you're saying that, that's very interesting, the idea that I'm creating or you're creating or anybody's creating something that may not even be for someone that is in their physical body yet.
Yes. And you're doing that too, man, right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're all doing that in our own ways. It's like a butterfly effect.
Yeah.
You going out and being kind to someone is going to affect someone else's day. Is going to affect the ripple in the world and eventually wrap around into the future and the now and the past and all of the things. But that, as you were saying that, it felt like something I think that many people struggle with is being too indulged in themselves and, you know, too indulged in like all the things that I need and all the, just being just like wrapped up in like this solo, I don't know, like casket within yourself in a way. And that, that sensation of this might not even be for, what I'm creating now might not even be for someone that's born yet. For some reason, it like hit something in me of like that sensation of like unicity or connection, you know, that I'm actually so small. It's not even about this lifetime. It's not even about my lifetime. It's not about this lifetime. It might be about someone else's lifetime in 10 generations from now. And this moment right now is so infinitesimally tiny. And I'm like complete, I'm having like a nervous breakdown about this moment, but it's so infinitesimally small at the same time. Does that make sense at all?
Yes.
It kind of, it's like, it like pulls time apart and of like, oh, like, it's kind of like being, like you climbed Mount Everest, you know, I wonder why you did that. I wonder, I'd be interested to like unpack like what brought you to that point.
Sure.
But being in situations like that, you climb a big mountain or being, you know, under like big surf or some situation, you realize how fucking small you are. And suddenly it puts everything into perspective. And suddenly a lot of the things that you thought were incredibly important kind of drift away and comes back into some of the things that actually, you know, actually valuable. What is actually valuable to you? What is like actually meaningful to you?
What's actually valuable and meaningful to me is being of service, having fun, laughing. And unlocking the magic potential in myself and others.
Is that, is there a shadow side of that to you? Does that come from, because I've heard you talk about depression, I've heard you talk about like avoidance, I've heard you talk about like a lack of intimacy or like a resistance around that. But those are all things that I've experienced a significant amount of.
Hey. You too?
Yeah, we're with my girlfriend is here right now, beautiful Maggie, and she just led us through breath work. And I used to be avoidant, much more avoidant. Now I've shifted over to anxious. I'm like subtly leaning into security. It's a whole pendulum.
You're there. You're secure, bro.
Thanks, bro.
You're secure.
I respect that.
So this is like, this is to answer your question, honestly, I don't believe in calling it a shadow. I just think it's training.
Yeah. Other side of the pole, maybe.
No, I experienced all those things, but I think they make me a better teacher. You can't teach something that you haven't yourself figured out and overcome.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of times God gives teachers pain to learn how to figure it out, and then you can help others to do so. And that sounds like, it might sound really callous to someone that's in that pain now, but that's how I think about those things. I used to call myself avoidant. I would never do that now. I might have avoidant habits, but that's not my identity. I am not avoidant, you know? So you might have avoidant habits, now you have anxious habits. But they're just those are just habits. Literally, they're habits. They're like little thoughts that you've practiced thinking.
Yeah.
And any habit can be changed, right? And so I think all the pain, and I've experienced my ration of pain in life, what I really believe is training. I really do.
How do you get through depression? Do you experience something that you would call depression? Based off of listening to other podcasts, I've heard the term depression. I think depression is like a very maybe subjective concept and giving different things to different people.
I think of it the exact same way now. I didn't always think of it this way, but I think depression for me 100% was just a habit. I didn't think it wasn't a disease for me or some crazy bug I got born with or bit with. Like it was a habit, a mode that I continually used my mind and my nervous system.
What seeded the habit?
It could be modeling, like parental behavior, or just something I started doing because I remember doing it in high school. So it just became something that I practiced a lot. It was a way I held my body, a way I breathed. Right. It was a particular thought pattern. And then I made an identity around those things. I said, I am this way. I'm a dark guy. I'm a depressed guy. And then you just keep doing more. You just keep repeating the pattern, the habit. But now when I think about that, I think, okay, I'm 35. I practice that habit a lot. Sometimes those grooves are somewhat instantiated and like, my nervous system. So sometimes I'll find myself going there, but I can use my body a different way. I can stand up straighter. I can use my breath a different way. I can think different thoughts. And it's really not my identity. You know, it's just a habit. And who I am is so much bigger than any habit. It's just so much bigger. And so, I've cured myself of that. I hesitate to use that word because I don't really think of it like a disease anymore. So it's kind of like it's a weird thing.
When you were in a state of depression, was it an ongoing thing? Was there a period? Was it episodic? Like, how was that experience for you? And is it still something that creeps in? You just have different language around it?
Yeah, it crept in this morning. Yeah. I wake up, I'm like, man, fuck this. Yeah. I just lay in bed here. And I have a name for that part of myself. I call it lurch. I'm like, man, I just want to lay here, dude.
What were you fuck this in about? What was the fuck this?
I was like, man, it's just a whole, like, you were talking about the casket of like.
Yeah, like straight jacket.
It's just a casket of self-pity. I'm like, man, I didn't sleep good last night, man. My fucking, like, fuck this, dude. Like, I don't want to do this day. And that I used to think, I just had to stay there. I'd wake up and I'd live my whole day from that state, and I would wait for my circumstances to give me an excuse to feel otherwise.
Right.
I'd wait for my circumstances to change my state.
Yeah.
That's a very weak place to live from, and I live from it most of my life.
It's very codependent.
Yeah.
Man. Codependent on the
external
world.
Yeah. And now it's like, I change my state, and then in turn my circumstances change. Like I used to wait for my circumstances to shine light upon me, and now I know I'm the light that shines on my circumstances. So then, like, what's the actual? How do you actually do that? You wake up feeling like lurch, Mike, and then how do you shift that? Man, it's easy, dude. It's actually like deceptively easy. And you do a lot of these things too. One is the cold water is like crazy.
Yeah.
I use music every morning, music that makes me happy. And I dance and I stand in a way that where my shoulders are back. I put my arms over my head. Like I just hit the game winning shot. Like I just hit the game. I feel that every day. For no reason. No, there was no shot. I just, yeah, fuck yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I'll say who I am. I don't say I'm avoidant. I don't say I'm anxious. I don't say I'm depressed. I say I am joy. I am faith. I am love. I am grace. I am gratitude. And I say it like I mean it. I am joy. I am faith. I am love. Bro, 5-10 minutes, lurch is gone. And then I go and start my day.
Could there be a bypassing and like an avoidance of those emotions that could come up with a person as well? Could there be value in leaning into those and going like to the end of them to find the light through them?
I think so. And I appreciate you bringing up the nuance of that, because sometimes those feelings of pain are pointing you towards something that you need to either address or learn or grow into.
Yeah, like it is the lesson.
It is the lesson. And so only the individual knows the difference. Mm. Only the individual knows the difference between leaning into, God, this hurts. I need to look here and grow from this. Or I'm making an identity out of this and milking this for attention from other people.
Yeah.
You want to have a balance, right? And so I think my experience of life at this point is January 11th, you know, and I'm 36. I think that...
What's your birthday?
February 12th. Oh. And I'm not 36. I'm about to be 36.
I was going
to
say, you just said you're 35.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, happy
she
birthday,
fucked
but
me
wait,
up
it's
with
not
that
February
breath
yet.
Work, dude.
We just still a breath work.
Golly.
I'm 47.
Hi, everyone. My name is Aaron Alexander. It's great to meet you.
It's October.
I think we're supposed to, I think we're supposed to feel. Maybe laugh more before we come back to the serious point.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Come back.
Palate cleansing fuck. Fuck. Woo.
You do good with like playfulness. It seems like you're very much tapped into your, you know,
do
like,
well,
inner child.
Bro. Do well.
Whatever, bro.
You're a professional.
Get off my dick, bro.
Podcaster.
I like you do good.
That amen.
Feels if, like, you know.
If it's working for you, stick with it.
I like simple, basic, straightforward.
Incorrect.
Yeah.
Grammar.
Whatever.
Yes, yeah, great, man. It's gotten you this far.
You do right.
Look how far you've come with look how far you've come with using that, you structuring those sentences incorrectly.
I've got a lot. I got a lot of work. I got a lot of work.
You're crushing it.
Got a lot of work to do. You do right with the staying tapped into that like inner child thing. Is that a consistent thing for you? Is like, it seems like when I met you, you probably have this experience with other people, or you maybe had this reflection from people, but it's very clear that you have like a significant depth, and like upon walking up to you, it's like, you know, sometimes you can meet somebody and it's almost can like, it's like contractive in a way. Like you meet them, it's like you can tell they're stressed like, out or they're anxious or or they're pissed off at you or whatever.
God damn it.
And then it's just kind of this like closing type thing. You, upon meeting you, I'm sure you have lots of oscillations of how you are, but upon meeting you, it was kind of this like expansiveness where I had to actually like retune my nervous system to like slow down, calm down, and listen.
Mm.
It's pretty interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is that something that
really kind.
Yeah.
Thank you for that reflection.
Yeah. Is it something that you cultivate? Is that like the standard for you? Is that just like baseline? Is that a practice?
I try to have it be baseline. Sometimes dip, you know, I dip under for sure. Like this morning, whatever. But, my thing I've been working on lately is laughing more.
Yeah.
And especially laughing at myself. I feel like that's the best antidote personally for me when I find myself in a situation. Let me tell you a story.
Mm.
I bought a hyperbaric chamber.
Oh, good.
Okay. And so it's
hard or soft?
Hard.
Good.
And wow. It's like, this shit costs more than my car.
Damn, you're going in.
And I'm like, spent all this money on it. And and I'm like, I put it in my garage and I'm getting in there, I'm using it. And I'm like, so I'm getting healthier using this thing. And then I started to feel a little weird. I had this like weird thing in my throat. And intuitively, I was like, I feel like I've been exposed to mold.
Mm.
So I got a mold test. My doctor's like, bro, you are full of mold. He's like, you're full of mold. So then I got the garage tested. And the garage is full of... So it's like, wow. I bought this chamber, think I'm getting healthy. At first I got upset. I was like, you know, I was like, man, this is fucked up. And I was in the self-pity casket.
Yeah.
And then I zoomed out and I was like, I spent an absurd amount of money on this like medical apparatus, and then I put it inside of a mold box, and then I laid in there for like, it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
it's hilarious. And so just laughing, being able to laugh at myself has been a real gift in recent months, man.
Yeah. So you, why did you climb Mount Everest?
There was a lot of reasons. And some of them were legitimate and some of them were illegitimate. And the mountain exposed all of them. Exposed all of them.
Yeah.
I was, well, let's start with the worst reason. The worst reason that I knew was bullshit before I even went to Nepal was I wanted, and it wasn't the main reason, but I want to be in integrity and tell you, like, it was probably like 20 to 30% in the concoction.
Yeah.
And that was, I wanted to be cool.
Of course.
I wanted to be a guy that did it.
It's the tallest mountain in the world. You did it.
Yeah. I wanted to be able to say, I fucking did it.
Yeah.
Right. So that reason sucks. I already knew that reason sucked before I left.
Yeah.
So there's that one. Then this was a more complicated reason, which was I wanted to explore myself and my potential. Could I do it and become a version of myself I was proud of? And then once I committed to doing it with my coach, there was my integrity itself, my word. So it was like those three reasons. Now I'm there. Reason number one, I already know is bullshit. As I start to climb the mountain, and it's like a guy I know who's a really experienced climber, and he goes up and he comes down and he's got frostbite on all 10 fingers. And there's another guy that goes, so he doesn't come back down. The second reason about exploring myself and becoming a version of myself that I'm proud of, I'm realizing this reason sucks too. Because exploring yourself and becoming a version of yourself that you're proud of is a beautiful practice. But when pushed to the very extreme, which is what Everest is, is actually a really selfish thing, and I think a silly thing to die for, right? Like, we as men, we should be ready to die for, like, our girl, our mothers. Like, that's a valid reason to put your life on the line.
Yeah.
I was putting my life on the line for my own self-exploration. So now I'm, like, getting to camp one, I'm like, that one's gone too. Because you run out of all three, you're not going to keep going up. We get to camp two. And camp two is like the worst place. My least favorite place on planet Earth is camp two of Mount Everest.
Why?
The air consists of 1/3 of the oxygen that the air we're breathing right now.
What's the elevation it came to?
21,000 feet, roughly. Mm. And it's big camp, so it can vary. But it's 21,000 feet plus.
Yeah.
And it just feels horrible to be a human there. It really does. And we just did breath work before we started recording. It's like the opposite of that. I mean, for me to walk from like here to the door, it would feel like you just did wind sprints. I'm not exaggerating. Little menial tasks like going to the bathroom are really hard. And when you go to sleep, the respiratory rate in the human body naturally slows down. Right, you sleep, your breath slows down. When I would start to fall asleep there, I'd get about one or two breaths, the respiratory rate would slow down, and my body would think it was suffocating. So it would wake me up, like that. So you're just there and you're not sleeping. Mm. And we were there.
Did you get headaches?
Bro, headache, man.
Nausea?
You got a headache like the whole time, like the whole expedition.
Yeah.
And you start to become dumber.
Right.
You know, it's probably why I'm
delirious at all.
Probably why I don't know how old I am to this day.
You get delirious? Start tripping?
I didn't trip till camp 4. We can talk about that after if you want.
Yeah.
But camp 2, it's just really hard to be happy. You know, it's like, it's not this Mike Posner. It's not like, it's you at your worst. Mm. You're at 10%, 15% of your battery's at 10 or 15%. And you're only at camp 2.
Yeah.
And then you're going to go try climb Everest from there.
Yeah.
You're not like happy or inspired. It's like, you feel like shit. Mm. And it's a storm there, which we knew was coming, but we knew good weather was after that and we wanted to be in position to go higher. And on tall mountains, steep mountains, when it snows a lot, you don't climb because that's when avalanches happen.
So you're just posted up there for
so days. So we were posted, not days and days, but like 3 days at camp 2. And we're waiting and it's the day after the storm, and I'm laying in the tent next to my coach, Dr. John. He's somehow sleeping. He's been on a lot more 8,000 meter peaks than me. I'm just awake, and I hear this rumble. It's the sound of an avalanche. Mm. And it was a sound I'd heard before, and usually they're like far away. So I didn't freak out on the sound, but moments later, I did freak out because our tent ripped open, snow started to pummel my face, fill up my sleeping bag, and Aaron, I didn't think I was gonna die. I knew I was gonna die.
Damn. I want to take a moment and share about one of the only supplements that I bring with me when I travel and the thing that I drink first thing when I get up every morning. That is a scoop of AG1. I'm a big fan of AG1. I have been for years. Reason being, it's a one-stop shop to make sure I'm covering the bases for my vitamins, my minerals, and also prebiotics and probiotics. After drinking a cup of AG1, I feel fantastic. It tastes delicious. And like I said, it is one of the only things that I bring because it is so darn convenient. AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily. And that's why they've been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/align. That's drinkag1.com/align. And I think you guys will really enjoy.
Avalanche, it's really hard to survive those. But there's like a small chance you could get rescued, but there's no chance you get rescued like that high on Mount Everest.
Yeah.
Cause it's just, it's not a thing. So
you can't get helicopters up there. There's not enough.
You could get a helicopter to camp 2. That's the highest they can go.
Okay.
But like, even if I like somehow survived, like how the fuck would I get back? Now I'm like, I'm not in my gear. My gear's gone. I'm in my sleep. Like, it's the nonstop. I knew it was over and I just felt terror. It was not a good feeling. And I was screaming. I was saying, John, avalanche. John woke up out of a dead sleep like you did at the Waterloo moment. He wakes up out of a dead sleep. He put his hand on my arm and he like almost clairvoyantly says, it's going to be okay. And almost like magic, the wind stopped, the snow stopped coming in. It just all stopped. Mm. And I look at my hands are shaking like this. And I'm like, we figured out that the avalanche stopped right before it hit our camp. So what we felt was the displacement of air that the slide pushed. Mm. It's like an air blast.
Like a bomb.
Yeah. And that could fuck you up and kill you too.
Wow. Holy shit.
But it didn't, thankfully. Like, you know what I mean? Thankfully. And so we were lucky. But I think about that moment a lot of John. Like, I'm at my worst. I'm at 10%. I'm bitchy. I'm questioning all my reasons. And he just, without thinking, he didn't gear himself up. He didn't do breath work. He didn't meditate out of a dead sleep. It's going to be okay. And I think about that. I think, man, like, I just want to do that for other people that are in like other kinds of avalanches in their lives.
Yeah.
Emotional avalanches, spiritual avalanches. You know, sometimes we're the person that's freaking out, and sometimes we're the person that could give someone else the gift of just saying, man, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, there's a Thich Nhat Hanh quote about that.
Love him.
Yeah, around essentially just that, like if everything's in chaos and everyone's freaking out and everyone's, you know, having a breakdown, all it takes is one person to maintain serenity and calm, and that can kind of dispel the whole situation. We just need one anchor, like find me an anchor.
Yeah,
you know, as long as we have one anchor, it's like, oh, okay, cool.
That's leadership.
Yeah. I wonder, it seems like something that I think that we may share, not that I want to project anything, but it's like a seeking of, like you said, like a self-love, self-respect, like manhood is kind of a thing that I think that, like, am I man enough? Am I good enough? Am I strong enough? Am I daring enough? Like rites of passage is kind of a thing that I've been seeking throughout my life that I think I've still not totally resolved with.
Yeah.
Is that something that you've experienced? Is that a part of why you walked across the country, why you climbed Mount Everest?
Yeah.
What do you think that is? And how does a man start to actually be able to address that in a way that sticks, as opposed to just becoming this like revolving thing?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I felt both sides of it, you know, where I felt like exactly what you said very eloquently. I felt all those things. Before I left, I felt like a boy in a 30-year-old's body. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do I not feel like that? Well, maybe do something really fucking hard that may help.
Yep.
So that was part of the impetus why I went on the walk for sure. And in the Bible, there's no teenagers. There's just boys and men. Hmm. And I think we lack, you know, that rite of passage in a lot of our society for
there's nothing
for young men, unless like you have this certain kind of parents that maybe they have that. But yeah, I think a lot of us, like me, things just went really well, almost like disturbingly well.
Yeah,
you know, I have my inner conflicts or whatever, but like on the surface, man, I got really good grades. I went to amazing college. Before I got out of that college, I had a record deal. I was making more money than the professors. I became famous. And then it was like, I got to a point where I was like, man, the thing that is gonna move the needle for me in my moment-to-moment experience of life is not going to be another hit song. Mm-hmm. That's gonna leave me right here with just like a little more money in my bank account and like a few more followers on my Instagram account.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the same motherfucker.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I've manufactured these sort of rites of passages for myself. But the second part of what you said is really important, which is like, where does it end? Mm-hmm. Like, when is enough enough?
Or is it even supposed to?
Yeah. Or is it even supposed to?
Yeah.
Because just like we talked about habits, I think I'm guilty. And this is like a live stream. I don't have this bit prepared and I'm unpacking as I speak. I think I was guilty of feeling like getting so caught in the habit, like we talked about habits, of doing the next hardest thing to prove to myself I'm a man.
Yeah.
But that, and never going, hey man, you climbed fucking Everest, bro.
Yeah.
Maybe it's enough.
It's the same analogy.
Like, you are pretty fucking tough, bro.
It's the same analogy as having the you know, 100 grand or whatever it is, hyperbaric chamber inside the moldy garage. It's the exact same analogy.
Yeah.
So like, cool, I'll get another record deal. Cool, I'll make some more money. Cool, I'll date a hotter chick. Cool, I'll climb a higher mountain. But I'm still inside the moldy garage.
Yeah.
So you can add whatever the hell you want to put in that moldy garage, yeah, but that vacuous, vacant sensation within your like soul,
yeah,
is not going to get adjusted until we do some deeper work.
Exactly.
What the hell is that deeper work? Yeah, right. Because so I'm trying to figure it out, son.
No, man. Like, it's so poignant because it's this balance, and like, we want everything to be like a really awesome soundbite for an Instagram reel. You know, it's not always that. It's often nuanced. And for me, it's a balance now between, okay, still do some hard shit every once in a while. Gotta do hard shit. You start to go crazy as a man. You're sitting in the house all day. You want to flip a fucking table sometimes. Yeah. You got to go out there like, I was talking to my mom because I'm getting ready to do Grand Canyon rim to rim to rim.
Oh, cool.
You know that hike? I've heard of it?
Not you've done rim it? To rim to rim. I've done rim to rim.
Rim to rim.
Rim to rim. And yeah, a couple different times. I've done it like the north side or south side or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going, it's just that back.
Yeah.
And so I was telling my mom, like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to do this thing. And she's like, well, how many days? I'm like, 2 days. I kind of wish I could do it in one. I probably could have done it in one like 2 years ago when I was in mountain shape, but it would 2 days. She's like, how far is it? 42 miles. She's like, well, why don't you do it slower? You know, you can enjoy it more.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't think you understand, like, when you got like a pair of balls and it, so you just go, you need to go crush yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a different kind of fun that, I don't know, maybe you don't have to do, mom. I don't think so. Yeah. She's like, that doesn't sound fun to her at all.
But what do you think that's satiating? Because I noticed as we were doing the breath work, for example, so we're doing with Maggie. Maggie's tendency is to be like, slow it down. And then both of us, I think there might have been like some subtle.
Let's go harder.
Yeah, some subtle back and forth, like not competition, but awareness of like, oh, fuck, Mike's picking it up. I'm like, I'm going to fucking outbreathe this motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that like masculine tendency to just harder is better. And harder then there's the other side.
And there's always another level.
Yeah.
There's a study like of little, they like film little girls.
Mm.
And I think they're 3 or 4 years old and they're talking. And one of the girls says like, I have a like blankety blank toy at home. And the other girl says, I have the same one. So their communication was about equity and like connection and being equal to each other.
Yeah.
And they showed like the boys the same age, and the boy's like, I went to Disneyland. And the other boy's like, I went to Disneyland for two days. And then the third boy's like, I'm going to Disneyland with my family for a month. And then the fourth boy's like, I'm moving to Disneyland. Like, and it's all about competition.
Yeah.
At this very, very young age. I don't know, you know. And so I think part of that's hardwired, maybe, or maybe it's already nurtured into them that young. I don't know.
Yeah.
But to like tie it back into what we're speaking about, which is finding what it means to be a man.
Mm-hmm. And finding like fulfillment as a man or a woman.
So there's it's a two-sided thing. It's like, on one hand, doing something hard that I'm actually proud of.
Yeah.
And my pride is no longer theoretical. Yeah. I think a lot about this, like we do things to expand our consciousness and actually expand our idea of ourselves. That's step one.
Mm-hmm.
That's like connecting upwards. And I think step two is you take that inspiration and do something with it here on this plane of reality. Create something, do something, move something.
Yeah.
Like, don't just bounce around up there. You know those people. They're like,
for sure.
Like, come back here. It's and like then
ayahuasca every weekend.
Yeah. And so with the manhood thing, it's like you want your pride and self-esteem to be sourced in reality. Like I actually did this. But evidence, it's not.
Evidence is important.
Correct.
Yeah.
But this is also step one. It's like, this is important, but don't get stuck in this loop of, now I have to fucking crush myself harder and harder and harder, 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 harder. And I met those people in the mountains. They're like, I'm going from here to K2 and there and there. And like, some of those people I met are dead now. Just proving to themselves how tough they are all alone on a mountain, you know? Yeah. And I don't know how, I don't think that's the end of the manhood search. I think that's part of it, a really integral part of it. And then over here, we have to have this like presence and recognition of what we did. And this actually was coming to me in when we did breath work earlier, a reminder. It's like, I am that guy. Mm-hmm. I am that guy. I don't have to do another thing. Like, I don't have to prove shit to anyone else. I don't have to prove shit to myself. I'm me here now. And you need both of these. And I think manhood comes from the balance between the two. And that's however you go too far on this and you kind of become soft. You go too far here and you're like a cantankerous dude at the gym that no one likes, you know?
What's the role of the female or the feminine in supporting the masculine or the male to come into themselves of like fulfillment and their own manhood? Is it a solo job, or is there, because that's where I feel like I've garnered a lot of my growth, is the reflection of a counterpart, partner.
Yeah.
A feminine partner, female partner particularly, like over male friend, like male friendships are just very different.
Yeah.
They like, it's like a totally different fuel source.
Yeah.
And the female, that's where it's like pulls all of the stuff. And
yeah.
It goes back into like primary caregiver stuff and childhood.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm crying because I'm not getting my way. And it's just all this. And I'm like, oh my God, like I'm not like a 4-year-old kicking and screaming child around like Mike. You know, so there's something like, what do you think about that? And what's been your journey with opening yourself up to intimacy?
Well, I think in a lot of ways I'm at the beginning, so I don't want to speak here that he's kind of like a fucking authority, because I dedicated my 20s, which seemed to have lasted a little bit into my 30s, to myself. A relationship was not a place I put a lot of energy.
Same.
What I realized, and this was a moment where you said, could there be, earlier when you made the distinction, which I really appreciate, about, hey, could there be a lesson in negative feelings? Mm-hmm. This was a moment where I had that a year and a half ago. I was like off of Everest. I'm like doing my ice fast, doing my breath work, doing my meditation, eating clean, training. And I keep getting sick. I keep getting depressed. Mm. I keep feeling like where'd the juice go? And I realized life was calling me to grow in a certain area. That was relationship.
Yeah, opening your heart.
Yeah, I was cutting myself off from it. And if you asked me at that time, like, yeah, man, that's like something. If it happens, great, but I'm not too worried about it. It'll happen when it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. But that was all like code for, I'm fucking terrified of that. And I'm scared of it. And so I cut myself. I told myself and others, it doesn't really matter to me. Mm. And lo and behold, like most of my journey was flown solo. Unsurprisingly, right? With that set of beliefs. But it was like life was not so subtly elbowing me in the side in the form of me getting sick, in the form of me feeling sad, for long periods of time, going, hey, motherfucker, you need to change in this area. And that was a gift. That was like a year ago. And so I experienced all the same things. I feel like in some ways I'm like very experienced at being alone and alone to like also extreme degrees. Like I have 4 times done these solitary retreats where I'm like all the way alone.
Like Vipassana or what kind?
No, Vipassana. I've done a Vipassana. Well,
you're with people.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to talk to them.
Yeah.
I go to this place periodically called Taramandala. Oh. You have to apply. And one of the things they offer there is a solitary retreat. So basically, they just leave you alone.
Yeah.
And they like I've done that for like 3 weeks where I just don't see anybody else. So like I'm good at being alone.
Did you feel like doing a darkness retreat?
I don't really feel called to that for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Do you? Have you?
I did one recently.
How was that?
It was really hard for me.
Yeah, I bet, dude. Yeah. Sitting in the fucking dark.
I would prefer for it to have not been as hard as it was.
I would prefer to not for it not to have been as dark as it was.
Yeah, it was harder than I would have liked. Like, it was
how long?
It was 4 days. So you go in. Whatever, like Thursday night or something like that. You can pick how many days you want to do. So it was like 5 nights. You go in at like 6 o'clock or whatever, and you kind of like hang out with yourself, and you have a little candle, and then you like
whew. Goodbye.
You're like, okay, like we're locked and loaded here, and then you just sit with yourself and flick your bean for 5 days.
You rub a few out.
Oh yeah, that was like the morning time.
Yeah,
tradition. You don't have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah.
So if you got like
you ever on like day three, rub a couple out.
No, I think it was like one a day.
Yeah. You had to throttle it down. You thought about it though? Like, man, fuck, dude.
Maybe. There was a bathtub. I did a lot of cold plunging. Yeah, so it was like ice cold water is in like mountains of Oregon. And so there's like ice, frigid ice cold water coming out of the tap. And so that was a regular tradition. And then I would like, so I'd do that. And then I'd do like jumping jacks and push-ups. I'd be like completely naked. You know, balls flailing about, just trying to like, you know, not go hyperthermic. And then like, that was my thing of the way that I was distracting. That was like my little mini Mount Everest of distraction.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm going to go borderline hypothermic. And then I'm going to have to warm myself manually, which is, you know, just from like exercise and push-ups and, you know, fucking huffing and puffing and breathing and just getting the body warm. Because it was winter time as well in Oregon. And I would intentionally not use a fire because if there's a fire and it's nighttime, then I'm not going to be able to sleep. So I like kept it kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a, but yeah, one wank a day though.
Shit white people do, man.
It's so stupid.
Yo, if I told some of my buddies from Detroit, like, yo, when they go into the darkness cave for 4 days and then I'm gonna borderline freeze myself. Yeah. Like, bro, what the fuck is wrong with you?
It's
dude?
Stupid. Yeah. I think it's like what I was gonna say earlier.
Friends like that are important, by the way.
What's that?
Like, I had a friend they'll just tell you how crazy you are.
Oh yeah.
You know? Because we're crazy.
Yeah, it's dumb.
You know? Yeah. I had a friend once where I was like, yeah, I'm gonna move into my van for a while. He was like, why? I was like, because I feel like I'm getting attached to like my house, you know. I lived in LA in the hills. I was like, I feel like I'm getting attached to all. I want to see if I can be happy without all the shit. He was like, you're such a dumb motherfucker. He's like, you know what I would do to have that house?
Yeah.
He's like, all you need to do is be grateful for the house.
Right.
You don't have to move into the van.
Right.
I was like, that's an interesting thought. Right. I think I'm gonna go in the van still. Because I'm a stubborn motherfucker, but
you just keep pushing around. One of the things that I was gonna suggest is in relation to all like the heart stuff and intimacy and all that. I feel like a person that I've lived most of my life like very much afraid of intimacy and very much like in avoidance of actually opening myself up to anybody in like a kind of more deep, more meaningful way.
Yeah, me too.
And I feel like what that ends up creating is like this subtle subconscious or conscious form of like hunger, almost like hungry ghost type sensation. Have you ever heard of the story of Hungry Ghost?
No.
Hungry Ghost is like
it's from Pac-Man?
Kind of. Hungry Ghost, that it's like a mythological creature who has a very narrow gullet, but then this like huge insatiable stomach, and they can just never get enough. And I feel like a lot of the experiences that we're seeking and the pleasure that we're seeking and the stimuli that we're seeking is kind of like us attempting to satiate this or quench this thirst, this unquenchable thirst, but we're actually not using the right, we don't have access to the right nutrients in order to be able to quench that hunger, that thirst. And I feel like as long as a person's living in that place of being afraid to love, being afraid to open themselves to love, being afraid to open themselves to being hurt, you know, and being afraid to open themselves to being vulnerable and like being truly deeply seen, likely there's going to be a lot of other urges and desires and perhaps addictions and sensations that arise. And I think like the deeper solution likely for many people is actually being courageous enough to love, which is sounds a little wanky to say, but I think there's accuracy to it.
And receive love.
Yeah.
I think you're right, man. Yeah. I think that in God. I believe in God.
So that's like the next level of love.
Yeah. That's like love. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah,
because you can put the love, it can become another codependence where you're like, okay, cool. Now I'm doing the love game with, you know, the opposite sex or same sex or whatever I'm attracted to. And now that's like, okay, now we're hitting, I'm starting to get that reflection from another person. I'm extending beyond just myself. And then there can be all the codependence that's attached to that. And then there's the next level, which is, you know, the God level, which God is the representation of, like, what is God? What does God mean to you?
God, I use almost interchangeably with life, capital L. Mm. God for me is something I have direct experience with. It's the energy that runs through all that is. And it loves me. Mm. And it loves you. Mm. And it's something I can trust. And something that has its hands on my shoulders, man. And has life revealing for me.
Have you,
not to me.
How long have you had a relationship to something that you would refer to as God? And is the relationship evolving as you grow?
I would say my spiritual journey started maybe, gosh, 10 or so years ago. Mm. And absolutely it's evolving and just getting stronger. Mm-hmm. You know, the more I make that the basis of my life, the better life is. Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of people are doing that, I think. Like, that's some old school stuff, making
not a
God
lot
the basis of your life.
Yeah.
Or that's like some other culture stuff. That's not like an American trend.
Not a lot of people are doing it. And I don't want to say I'm fully doing it because I get caught in my ego all the time.
Yeah.
But not nobody's doing it either.
For sure.
Yeah. And so
they're probably just typically not as vocal about it, you know? Like, if you're actually really, truly in a place of, you know, equanimity and ease and grace and all of that, there's probably not necessarily, you're probably not going to be like blaring it on Instagram.
Yeah.
Probably just be kind of quiet.
Perhaps. Or I don't know. I think it could take a lot of different forms. But I have a friend show me a poem. And it was called "Don't Trap God in the Church," meaning like the theme of the poem was that you can experience God all the time and anywhere, which I believe.
Yeah,
but I also think you could get into a trap, like don't trap God out of the church. And for me, it's been really actually unexpected. I grew up very secular. I wasn't taught about God or anything like that when I was a kid. I grew up like a secular version of Judaism. Mm. So we'd go to Sunday school, but we would learn about our language, our history, and our music. There was no God. And man, when I like get around a bunch of people praying and worship, whether it's in a church or like kirtan, I just like really feel it, man. Mm-hmm. I really feel it.
Yeah.
And so I've started going to church. Which I did not. And I'll tell you how it happened. It was through music.
Yeah.
I heard a song, which you probably can't put in the podcast, but we can reference it.
Yeah.
It's called The Blessing by Carrie Job. And it is these people singing the song they wrote. The lyrics are from the Bible, and they sing it live on a Sunday at a normal. And there's a video of it. The YouTube video is crazy. And you just see like these thousands of people, and they're all like in the zone,
mm-hmm.
praying hard, and people are crying. So much so that it just like, it cracked me open, the recording of it. And then I was like, man, I want to be around some music like that.
Yeah.
And when you go to church, they don't call it music. They call it worship. And so I just start going to church to like feel that feeling more, and
mm-hmm.
it's awesome. I love
it. It's another thing that kind of snaps you out of that like straitjacket of loneliness, or snaps mm-hmm. a person out of that, and that solitariness, and like we're on, you know, we're doing this thing on our own, being, you know, attuning to a group of people singing the same song.
Yeah,
like, and it's a similar thing happens even if you're watching the same movie. You can actually track multiple people's heart rates will start to become in sync just based off of watching that same movie together.
Whoa.
Singing songs together, all of that, it extends. Like humans are built to attune.
How in sync do you think our hearts are right now on a percentage basis? If 100 is perfectly in sync.
Perfectly in sync. I feel like you run a little bit more with a little more ease than I do. And I had like multiple energy drinks and a couple cups of coffee, and you know, I'm
you're at about,
I feel like you're more chilling than I
feel
am.
Like you're about 96 BPM.
is my
you're at 96 BPM over there.
I'm running hot.
You're running hot, dude. We gotta get him another water. He's gonna overheat.
I think I'm running hot. It's definitely. But you can do it. And that's like, I think that's what rapport is. That's like what creating trust with the person is. Like when you start to see yourself in someone else's eyes, you know, and you start to, and that's what like care is. That's what generosity is. And that's why typically the happiest person is the most generous person. Typically the happiest person is the person that's like, you know, give it away. Like we're good. We're safe.
You love something, give it away.
You know, but it's unpacking and defragging those programs that say that, you know, you're not going to have enough. You're not safe. You know, protect yourself. Preserve yourself.
Yeah.
Do whatever you need. You know, it's like that shark kind of business energy. It doesn't translate to ease or fulfillment.
Mm-mm.
You know, it's good to understand games, you know, and mechanics and all of that stuff. But that sensation of actually finding fulfillment and finding ease and finding like, you know, I think it all comes back to like love eventually.
It's all about love.
It's all about love, bro. I really appreciate
this. Is one of the coolest podcasts I've done.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
It's something just about nothing about, well, all the conversations been good, but just the energy.
Oh, cool. I appreciate that.
It feels just like really, feels really present.
Oh, dope. I think you bring that.
I think
not to
thank
reflect.
You. I think I'm bringing some of it.
It's a teamwork.
I think I'm bringing some of it.
You're bringing
it. Let's be honest here, man. You know, like,
no, you flip.
I'm pretty strong member of the team.
You flip the script. I'm telling you, when we first rolled up, I was like, oh, okay, I need to like get present.
Because I was meandering around. I was meandering around the parking lot.
No, you really do. I'm sure you get this reflection all the time, but it's very nice. There's like a tangible depth. That like you can, I mean, you can just experience this with different people. Different people make you feel different ways. That sensation, which is I think an incredible gift to be able to offer, which is another interesting thing. Like maybe a gift isn't necessarily like I have to build somebody something or buy them something at Walmart or whatever. Maybe the gift could just be presence.
It definitely can be. Yeah. It definitely can be.
And that was like a gift that I garnered before this podcast, where I was kind of like, you know, I was like sweaty and working out and getting all fucking hyped and had chains around my hips doing dips and whatnot.
Yeah,
and
I then saw you, dude. And I was like, damn, that guy over there is strong. I was like, oh, that's the guy that's interviewing me?
Yeah. And then
God damn, I felt the opposite. All right, you get on this pull-up bar.
Well, that's the teamwork.
Yeah.
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 But I really appreciate who you are, you know, and the way that you've been able to encapsulate the depth of who you are into a vehicle that can be, you know, shared and received from all of us. It's very cool. It's so significant. Like artists, you know, comedians, musicians, actors as well, for sure. Yeah, actors. I think especially
I think
especially comedians and musicians. Actors as well. Nothing against actors. Comedians, musicians, for me, I think it's like it hits something different. And I think it's like, if we didn't have you in culture, I think that we would be in a rough spot. You know, like using your music and that work that you do when you go and probably spend an immense amount of time alone. Like, I think probably the idea of like a famous musician or whatever would be like, you just always have, you know, chicks fucking hanging off your ankles and people hitting you up and all that stuff, which you might have that, but also in order to actually be efficacious at the thing that you're doing, you're probably just spending an immense amount of time alone. And then also that there's also the potential of subtly, depending on how famous a person gets, suddenly becoming alienated from the rest of the world. So then you get even more alone.
Yeah.
And perhaps the reason the person started that in the first place was because they felt alone and they wanted to, you know, feel loved.
Yeah.
And so they went in and created this thing, and it's just like the work, and the energy put in from an artist to be able to do that. It's a lot. I would imagine it's a lot. I mean, I don't know, but it seems like it's probably a lot.
You're very, what's the word?
Flamboyant?
That too. You're very, you're very empathetic and deep, because you're exactly right. You know, I always think about that with John Mayer, because you see John Mayer, everyone has like it triggers something when you hear John Mayer, because he's so funny. But when I see John Mayer, I think about exactly about what you said. How years this guy must have spent alone in a room to play a guitar like that. And I'm just your reflection, and I benefit from the art of others the same way you do. And it's an honor to be able to make my contribution.
Yeah, it's dope, man.
And I'm grateful for the opportunity to share also with your audience here today.
Yeah, thank you, bro.
You know, because one of the loops that, the pitfall loops, you know, you could fall into is using, and I'm guilty of this sometimes to this day, is using a past accomplishment, like a cool thing you did, in my case, like Everest or the walk, what have you, to feel superior to others.
Yeah.
And that's really like poison. Mm. Like, you never want to use your accomplishment to disconnect from others.
It will just make you feel more alone.
Correct.
The exact reason that you did the accomplishment in the first place was to feel connected, to feel loved, and then using that as a way to actually segregate and separate yourself from others and be in like an elitist place suddenly just makes that alone sensation deeper. It's the hyperbaric chamber in the moldy garage.
In the moldy garage. But the second half of that is today I feel like I had the gift of being able to do the opposite, which was to use those things to hopefully help others on their journey.
Yep.
and to connect me to other humans, connect my story to other humans.
Yeah.
The same way we talked about earlier, like when you write a song. So in some ways, like, this is part of my walk, this is part of my climb, and I'm appreciative of the space, man.
Likewise, bro.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. You have an album coming up.
Yes.
But you don't know when it's coming out, so we can talk about it.
No, not quite. We can talk about it still.
What's the what can we share about it?
It's fucking dope.
I believe that.
No, it's about a lot of these themes.
Yeah.
That we've covered. Actually, it's really cool. You know, I made it that I talked about my life where the pain was pointing me towards a new lesson I needed to learn. And the album cover goes from then until now.
Oh.
And so, yeah, it I love it, man. I think it's, I'm a tad biased, but yeah. I think it's fucking awesome.
That's rad for you to be in a place of creating art that you are. It's genuinely like for you where you're like actually like this is dope.
Yeah, dude, if you don't think your shit's dope, you shouldn't be doing it.
And then presumably in 5 years or 10 years or whatever, you look back and be like, hopefully still think it's dope, but there's always the risk. Like if I were to listen to any podcast episode that I did from 5 years ago, I'd be like, we're gonna listen to that.
Uh-oh. What are the biggest changes you've made? Areas of growth?
I think probably one of the big things, just listening more, you know, and I think I'm still guilty of, you know, like kind of over vocalizing, but I think like
just, not today.
Yeah, today was all right.
10 out of 10 on my report card.
I was a little wordy on the whole like casket. I was trying to.
No, that was a good one. How about when you did, what was the word you used for throat? That was a good word.
I don't know.
For the Hungry Ghost. Gullet.
Yeah,
you were gullet, that was good.
I tapped in on that one.
That was dope.
Yeah, I went in.
Yeah, man, you were fucking flexing on that one. I don't want to just fucking drink. Oh, you think I don't know about good and well, Posner? Watch this gullet usage. Bang.
So the album comes out at some point in the future. We'll see. Whatever it does.
Yeah, dude.
People will know about it.
They can follow me on Spotify.
Is there anything else that would be good to share? Anything else to leave folks with?
If you're going through hell, keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And beginnings always hide themselves in ends.
Mm. I love that. The something that's a phrase or quote or that's been relevant this year, not for me, but for somebody else that I've been working with, and then also it's just somewhere for me, is the, how's it go? The night is always darkest before the dawn.
Yeah.
I think that's something for folks that are like at the edge, which I've been at the edge multiple times, even just this year, which, you know, edges are always like probably ever expanding your perception of what edge is. Mm. But that's something that's like, if a person is in the place where it's like, it couldn't get any darker, there's a very good chance it's like, oh, like amazing. It's actually like the perfect, like you're in the best spot.
You're about to have a major breakthrough.
Yeah. Like it couldn't get any darker. Like amazing.
Pain and darkness lead directly to the light.
Yeah. Hopefully.
No, they do, bro. They do.
you tell them a little.
Unless you just pull the plug too early.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, go in.
For sure they do.
Yeah.
The only evidence I have is my life and a lot of my teachers' lives, people I respect, and that's true for all of them and me. So.
All right. Well, thank you, brother.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. Thank you, Maggie, for the breath work.
Yeah, Maggie.
Woo!
She unleashed us.
That's it. That's all. Thank you for tuning in. See you next week.
You guys enjoyed that conversation. If you did, jump over to the YouTube to watch the whole video version of this. And also we have a ton of instructional content over there. We post each week and it's a good time. That is at Align Podcast. Subscribe to that. I appreciate seeing you guys over there and answering comments and things of the like. Thanks for subscribing to this. Thanks for leaving reviews. Thanks for telling your friends. Thanks for joining you. I'll see you next week.